Welcome back to the Collector's Cast. We're here once again to discuss all things collecting, picking, junking, and sometimes hoarding, if you will. How are you doing today, Mike?
Hey, good, Clint. Good, Clint. Good to be back, and hopefully we got lots of followers.
I think we do, actually. I think it's building up now. It's in the dozens, anyway. We are, as always, we're here to educate and to learn ourselves about collecting and all the different branches of collecting. And today, one of the things we were going to talk a little bit about that falls on a recent purchase we covered in another episode, and it was that big carnival wheel behind you. And you'll notice I got some little tin carnival toys out here. And the common thread here is that carnival collecting is hot. It has been for a long time, but if you find genuine old carny circus stuff, buy it, because it's only going to go up in value. It's a thing that's died off now. We've talked about this before, how when we were kids and the circus came to town, it was like the biggest thing there was. And I mean, I'm only 51 years old and I remember it, but it goes way back before me. But today's youth, not so much. I don't think guys the age of like our producer Matt have been to many circuses, Matt. Okay. Well,
I haven't been to one in a while.
But they probably have. Do they have animals in the ones you were in? Okay. See, that is something you rarely see now. The circus animals are even the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus retired all their elephants. Did you ever see that footage? They had them in a big. They let them out into a big kind of center ring, and they had this huge table all filled up with watermelons and big fruit and stuff that the elephants like to eat. And they kind of gave them their retirement party, and they released all the elephants from service. And I guess it went to wherever the elephants go to.
Elephant Rome retirement home.
Yes. Yes. Pack your trunk.
That's
we're
where
moving.
They go. Yes.
So just circus stuff in general. If you can find any old clown memorabilia, some about clowns, man, you either are really freaked out by them or you love them kind of thing. I personally like them. Mike, how do you feel?
I like them. I like the scary clowns too.
But who, now there is somebody, and Mike knows who I'm thinking of, who loves creepy and freaky clowns more.
My brother, Jeff, he has a room in his cabin that's dedicated to clowns. And it's actually, or the whole family calls it the creepy room. Oh yeah, he loves clowns. We'll have to get him on the show at some point and talk about clowns.
When we get him to come visit, but, yeah.
You know, Clint, just getting back to the carnival stuff though, with or without clowns, some of the old carnival banners hand painted and wonderful colors and all types of pageantry. Apparently, those are always valuable.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, of course, the better condition they are, but I believe there is, even in New York State, there is a company that just completely, their business is restoring old carnival banners.
Wow. Now, you know, something is a thing when a business strikes up just to restore that thing. That's pretty cool. Well, it's because you don't see them anymore. It's like anything, once it becomes out of use in society, it sort of drifts away and all the old ones start fading away and getting thrown away and into landfills and whatever. And that goes with those banners and all the other stuff that comes with old signage from carnivals. Usually everything back then is painted with really big, thick lead paint, you know, nice, like it's almost tangible that you can almost reach into it, the big thick blues and yellows and reds. And it's just a magical thing that kind of sticks with me anyway. I remember it all my life, loving anything carnival or circus, anything to do with rides, clowns. I do agree about the freeing the animals thing. That was never a deal that I was into too much.
Another thing that that I really like, I don't own any, but I would sure like to, is the old carnival rides, the little, whether it was a car or an airplane, the cart that you sat in and it took you around the track.
Well, you're in for a treat. This was not planned that you said that, but I did just recently do a deal on, I don't have it here yet, but one of those old P&E carnival rides that you sit in, and they usually had a buzzer. Little kids, you know, little kids, that they're not going to go on anything scary. So you put them in a little cart, a little motorcycle or a little car or a dune buggy, and they go round and round in a circle, and they all got a little steering wheel and a buzzer. Do you ever ride those? So they're quite familiar, and they're usually painted with the coolest metal flake paint.
Yeah. Metal flake, and they have, like, unbelievable striping graphics on them.
And taillights like this couch.
Taillights, and they would always be modeled after, like, kind of a 57 Chev or kind of a 55 Chev or kind of a Ford.
But not enough to get sued.
Exactly, not enough to get sued.
Well, the one that I've done the deal on, I've yet to see it, and I'm going to throw out a little bit of a shameless promo to the Badass Garage in Mission, BC. They're friends of mine, and they do have a lot of memorabilia for sale, and I bought it through them, so it's on its way out here. It's one of those six-wheelers that looks like an old, they used to call them an Argo, the six-wheel off-roader. And it's basically like a metal flake bathtub with six wheels, but only inside there's two rows of seats and there's six steering wheels in the thing. So six kids could ride around. Everybody got to drive.
Fantastic.
So yeah.
Can't wait to see it.
That's on its way to the Shop of Wonders here before we know it. And I'll also, something else I'd really like to get my hands on is a pair of clown shoes, real actual clown shoes from back in the day. And they're quite collectible too.
Yeah, and you know what else I understand is quite collectible is the bowling pins that you'd throw the sandbag at, they'd never knock over.
Yeah.
But apparently those are quite popular.
Well, they're
too.
Still around because even during the San Francisco earthquake, they were the only thing still standing after. Yeah, they were weighted pretty heavy in the bottom or something. Yeah. Plus a little dab of glue or something. I don't know what it was. But, you're very, very right on that. Any kind of accessory. Yeah, any kind of accessory. The carnival wheels, again, like this one that I got recently, are highly, highly collectible because they're just so full of color and vibrance, and they just make a room, in my opinion.
Just be prepared to take a couple people with you to lift it because the thing weighs a couple hundred pounds.
It's, you know, collectors of anything antique, you're going to learn this as you get into it. Everything old is typically heavy. Everything you go to move is heavy. They built it to last a century, but that's why it was so heavy. They didn't have to move it for 100 years. And, you know, I could actually use that to segue into one of my other recent finds, not carnival related, but looking down to the end of the room to your right there. We can't see it on camera, but we can't see it on the audio airwaves either. So I'll describe it. And I think we'll probably put a picture up on the website. Is a vintage barber chair, a Koken barber chair that I just recently got. And it's from the probably early 1900s to 19-teens. And the thing about this that makes it so different, they're often either made out of wood or white porcelain with then red leather or black leather on them. This barber chair is green porcelain enamel, and then the upholstery on it is green velour. So it's just something I've never seen before. They're always white or red, and this thing is green on green. It's just an amazing find. And going back to the thing about old things being heavy, if you buy a barber chair from this era, have at least three strong guys to lift it. It's, you and I have done them before, two of us. Mike and I have lifted a barber chair into the back of my pickup truck, just the two of us. But then, you know, you're pooping out your own intestines afterwards.
And do not lift it by the seat.
Don't lift them by the chair. This is something people don't realize. They all go to lift a barber chair up by the seat, and the big cylinder just lifts, the piston lifts out of the cylinder. There's oil all over the place, and you never seem to be able to get them back in without buggering up the seal. So always pick up a barber chair from the bottom. People have wrecked hundreds of them doing it the wrong way. Yeah,
pick it up by the base.
Good advice. So, yeah, and that in itself could lead to another whole genre of collecting, which is the barbershop vintage branch of collecting altogether. Vintage barbershop is quite big, too. We'll have to cover that sometime. Barbershop poles I've owned and sold, chairs, signage. I got an old set of combs there, just a comb display where it's bragging that they're now non-inflammable, because I guess combs used to spontaneously combust as you were combing your hair with the wrong Brill Cream, and there would be some sort of chemical reaction, and boom, you're Richard Pryor.
Wow, that's a hothead.
And on that note, I think we'll take a little break, and we'll come back with a special guest right after this. Okay, we've been talking about circus and carnival stuff, so I thought now we'd bring in the head monkey himself. Actually, we've got a real treat for some of our listeners here, especially the old-timers who like picking back in the old days. This guy has been doing it since Moses wore short pants, Mr. Ted Lyon. Welcome him, everybody. How you doing, Teddy?
Not bad for an old guy.
You know, Ted, you're 81 years old and don't look a day over 90.
That's right. I was born at a very young age, bald like a baby, they said.
Good to have you here, Teddy.
The reason we brought Ted on is because we all collect and pick and go and look at junk, but this guy's been doing it longer than anybody alive, just about. And he used to buy antiques and that out east. And, geez, some of the stories you told me, you'd come to a town and they'd have ads in the newspaper, big antique buyers coming to town, bring your cash. And you guys used to advertise in that, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to have it set up with a store there. That antique buyer from Ontario is coming. Call. So she'd get all the ads and stuff, and I'd fly back, and I wouldn't fly, we'd drive back, and I'd follow all the calls up, but loads and loads of stuff.
Yeah.
So Ted, you'd run the ad for a store, and then the people would bring all their antiques?
No, they would phone in and say, I've got an old guitar, or I got some coil oil lamps, or I got some coins, or got whatever. And I'd leave their number, I'd call them, I'd go look at them, give them a price.
Awesome, yeah.
Worked good. Yeah, a day was good, but then a new idea is only as good as it lasts.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens. Yeah. People get, like in the catalytic converter business, I was one of the biggest ones in the province. Until the Americans come with all the money. Then you drop down the ladder like a sack full of pooey.
Isn't that funny how things lead to other things? Being a junker and a scrapper and buying, and you used to buy a lot of scrap metal.
Oh.
And still do.
Yeah.
And then that turned into catalytic converters one day. And you were one of the first guys that ever knew they were worth anything.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But, we've had a great life. I'm having a lot of fun. Yeah, I'll tell you, I wouldn't trade any of it. The wife, which is not with me any longer, but we traveled all over the place buying, selling.
One end of this country to the other and back.
Yeah.
And down in the States too, right?
Yeah. We done Washington, Oregon, about in Nevada, but lots of places.
One thing we talked on the show about, Teddy, a lot is auctions are a good place to buy stuff if you know what you're doing, because you know as well you can get fleeced there and get thrown out wearing nothing but a barrel and suspenders. But you're one of them guys that used to fleece people. You're one of the oldest auctioneers I know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's something to be proud of.
Yeah, but back in the day, you went to school for it. They had.
I went to school in Mason City, Iowa. I could do it ever since I was a little kid. I used to go to sales with my dad, and they thought it was cute. A little boy could do this auction. So they get me.
What would you say as a little kid? What would you?
Oh. No, I have no idea.
No, but, you know, give us a little bit of the old Ted roll.
Oh, golly, I can't go back that far. Yeah, $25, middle with there, and 30, there, and five, mid, 40, take a long, take a right, and repeat after me. Yep. 50, thank you now.
Oh, so, I've seen him do it, folks, and when he gets there, you get creative too, eh? You know, you're getting that one more bid, and the guy won't put up his hand. He's like, come on, I'll lend you $5.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me.
You know, Ted, one thing, so I've known you for quite a while now, and I noticed that you'll buy anything. Like,
if you make a buck on it.
No.
If he thinks he can make a buck on it, he'll buy it.
I just noticed that. Like, one day, Ted will be there, and he'll have an antique gun. Next thing, he's buying a old diesel stove out of an old yacht.
You make good money on that.
Yeah.
Stove.
Then next thing, he's got some old bicycle. I noticed that You just got an eye for almost anything, Ted.
Well, that's what my daughter said. She said, my dad can make a living in an anthill, she said. I don't know how he sees money in that. Well, it's not always money.
You're always able to make milk out of goat piss, weren't you?
Couldn't quite handle that one, but I did.
And what did you tell me that one day, Ted? That they always told you you had a great face for radio.
Yeah, they said yeah, you got a great face for radio. We're rolling along here. Just drove in from Montana this morning, swinging doors in a buckskin top. Boys, what do you want to give for? It's got twigs.
That's it. I love it.
She's red and white, and the color's just right. She's up to her knees in rubber. The price is right. We'll sell her tonight.
This is what I like about hanging out with this guy in person, is because you'll be in a restaurant having coffee, and he breaks out into that. It's fun. The waitresses start looking, and, you know, it's a neat thing to have.
So you get a free coffee sometimes.
And it's a dying art, Ted. Now, you taught me to auctioneer. People don't know this. Ted taught me to, and I used to follow you, but not a lot of people are following me. There's not a lot of young guys doing this anymore.
No, it's totally different today. But it's like mom and pop restaurants. The powers are ruining all that stuff. Same as the old-fashioned auction. It used to be great to go to Saturday night auction out at Endersville there. And
it was an event.
It was an event. Everybody would come, and you'd get one guy have a case of beer in the trunk, you'd have a beer, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's the way it went. Now, I don't like the way, of course, I'm an old-fashioned guy anyway. I don't like the way things are going today. Mom and pop work real hard to build that business, and some guy from Esso with lots of money put him out of business. I don't like it, personally.
I'm with you.
And even now with the auctions, they said, like, people just go online, see an item, and just put a bid in, and they might not check it for 2 or 3 days, or till they get notice that they purchased it or whatever. But, like, you know what I mean?
There's no excitement.
There's no fun. Hey, step right up.
They're not present there.
No, there's no fun. There's no excitement. Even the modern, since COVID, they put most of any auction that didn't shut down went only online. And that's just boring sitting there, especially when they don't have a live auctioneer on the
audio. It's not fun anymore. But, say, I'm the only guy that ever put a puck by Mike here.
That's the other thing. We haven't talked about Mike's
illustrious. It was the five hole.
We haven't talked about Mike's illustrious hockey career yet on the show, but he
was a good one.
He did have
quite
a stint.
All them Ukrainians, boy.
Back in the day. But Ted, as well, you know, you used to run the Junior B team out of Oshawa, wasn't it?
No, I owned it in Kitchener.
In Kitchener, that's right, sorry.
Remember I had to borrow money from you to help pay the bills?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, we had a lot of fun. We've had a wonderful, wonderful life, I'll tell you. My daughter, she made it into the world's twice in mountain biking.
No kidding.
Yeah. My son, he's
a musician.
He got a scholarship in hockey. So I can't even remember the place now. Yeah. But I'm the only one in the family with no talent.
Ted, well, I don't know. You were a pretty good hockey player back in the day.
Not as good as these Ukes.
Oh, what about when you were your professional boxing career? Didn't they call you Canvasback
Lion? They did. I had two fights. I was in the ring twice, and I got knocked down both times.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Ted, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the most interesting item you think you ever bought?
Well, I bought a few. A Quackenbush rifle.
A Quackenbush rifle.
There's very, very few of them. And I bought one, and I think I bought it in Woodstock, New Brunswick, if I remember right.
Wow.
And now, word traveled before I got back home.
Now, I'm not a huge gun guy. I mean, I do have a gun. You know, I have a license. But Mike is an avid gun guy.
I bet you.
Have you ever heard of a Quackenbush?
Never.
You can bring it up. And I come home, I don't know how word traveled I had it, but when I got back, and your mom was with me then, I got back, I pulled into our house, there's a reporter sitting on the step wanting to do a story on this quack. I still got the story on the Quackenbush.
No kidding.
And another thing I bought was off of, Leanne, I had it hid behind the couch, and you and another girl took it to school for show and tell.
What was it?
It was a ivory tusk off of something, mastodon or some damn thing.
Some mastodon tusk worth thousands or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he went to sell her one day, and it wasn't behind the couch.
I said, what happened to it? And I'm out and I'm looking, and there comes Leanne and another little girl. They're carrying it down the street. They took it to school for show and tell.
For show and tell.
Do you remember that, Dad? We had a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
Well, that's a Quackenbush rifle. So that's, I'm going to.
Pull it up and anything.
Yeah, I'm going to.
So
I'm
when you to. When you hear the duck quack, you just fire into the bush.
Is never thought right? of that. Yeah.
Well, don't start telling the story about your old muzzleloading Steiner, because we'll be here all day.
Yeah, that was the best hunting trip I was ever on. That was a good one.
Well, I remember you used to hunt with a club. There was about 50 in the
50
club,
was in
you?
The club, yeah.
Ted, what do you think about this? I'm going to ask you this other question. The other, you know, few weeks back, whatever, there was that, at an auction, that Black Cat tobacco sign sold for $12,000. Did you ever think back when you're out picking stuff and you'd see these old signs on them, did you ever think that someone would pay $12,000 for a sign?
I thought right away he should change dealers.
You probably bought your first house for $12,000.
Sick. I forget what we paid. 16 or 18.
Yeah.
I still owe most of it. No.
There's still an eviction notice on the door.
Yeah, right. Oh, golly.
So we do this thing around here, Teddy, about now that we call listener questions. And we usually have somebody send in a question. And I think Mike's got it in his hand there. He's going to read it off to us. Let's see what they want to know. Maybe you can help us answer it. You never know.
We've got a question today from Stuart Garys from Penticton, B.C.
Oh, Penticton.
And Stuart writes in, "Hey, Clint and Mike, I'm a big movie and superhero buff. I was wondering if either of you had any collecting stories or highlights that involved any movie or superhero paraphernalia. Anything Batman would be extremely exciting. Can't wait to listen to the show once it goes live." Ooh. Well, thanks a lot, Stuart. And I'm just going to just jump in on this first, if I may. It's about the
superheroes.
Interesting little joke we had one day. Clint and I were talking with another fellow about superheroes, which superheroes he liked. And he started naming off all these superheroes, Aquaman and this guy, that guy. And I was like, kind of sat there like stunned. And I said, "Holy smokes. When I was a kid, I think we only had three superheroes. There was Superman, Batman, and maybe Tarzan, if you threw him in on that."
Well, I said, "What about Robin?" You said, "Okay, four."
Okay. Four. Oh, I think I said 3.5.
Yeah, so we gave Robin a half. Robin's a half.
Good.
You know what? I bet you Ted's the perfect guy to ask it. You don't know anything about superheroes, do you?
I do. I have one.
Oh, okay.
My daughter.
Oh, well, that's very
awesome.
Nice.
That's great, Ted.
She kept me alive.
Yeah. That's an awesome attitude, man. She is your superhero. I like it. Well, personally, as far as the superhero story goes, I guess I got one. I remember a friend of mine, her son lost his house. Now, I didn't collect anything superhero related particularly, but I just happened to be at a guy's, another picker's house, buying a few things, and he had this old Superman action figure, about maybe 8 inches tall or something like that. Yeah, I bought it for a few bucks. I can't remember what I paid. But I had that, and somewhere in my pickets, too, I had a Superman record, an album from 1976. And I had those two things sitting on a shelf by my desk at the wrecking yard. And this friend of mine, her son's house burned down. And I heard about it. I was like, "Oh, my goodness, everybody's okay. Yeah, they lost everything." And she starts telling me, yeah, he was this Superman collector, him and his son. They had all the Superman stuff, and they lost it. And I said, "Geez, oh, I don't know if this is going to help much." But I said, "You know, I have a couple of Superman things I'll give you." So I gave her this doll and this record.
That's nice.
And she come back later at me and said, "Holy smokes, do you know that doll is worth, like, I guess it had the S on his chest was the little one or something versus the big one. I don't know." She goes, "Oh, that thing is really rare." And I said, "Oh, no, it's a gift, you know."
How rare?
Well, no. But you know
can
what?
I have it back?
And that's that. You know, you bring up a good point. I probably paid $25 for it or something like that. So to me, it's nothing. And if it turns out it was worth $2,500, oh, well, big deal. It was the thought in it. I didn't stand me personally very much. Her son and grandson had lost their Superman paraphernalia. I just gave it to them as a nice thing to do, and bang. Found out it was worth money, but it doesn't matter. And you know what really doesn't matter is they're not the kind of people that are going to sell it. They're going to keep it, and they're going to cherish it.
Yeah.
I see our producers over here handing me something. He's handing me a Batmobile.
Yeah.
Now, this is my least favorite Batmobile, I will tell you. It's the 1990 Michael Keaton version. And why do I have this here? Is that what you're curious about? Well, mainly, I'll tell you why I bought that exactly. Because I do collect, to some degree, Superman, Batman, whatever, superhero memorabilia, if it's big and displays well. And when you got a shop this size with big statement pieces, it's hard if you got a couple little Hot Wheels cars, Batman, or whatever, it doesn't do much. But I see something like this in an auction, and it's, you know, over a foot long, and it sticks out. You put that on a shelf, and it just looks cool. I certainly didn't buy it to play with.
Well, listen, one more thing for Stu. Stu, I've got an item at home. I don't have it here, but you might be interested in this. When I was 6 years old, so that would have been somewhere in the after the mid-60s.
Barely.
My mom bought my brother and I these Batman and Robin bolo ties.
Really?
Little bolo ties, yeah. And
like a Mississippi string tie.
Yeah, like a Mississippi string tie. And my brother got the Batman, and I got the Robin one.
Oh, and that's still, where you got a little bit of hatred.
Still
to
have them to this
Robin
day. Yeah,
bit,
I had to
though.
Get the Robin one because I was a year younger, 14 months younger. So I got the, but we still have those. So that was, like I said, in the 60s.
What
so
an odd
it's
thing,
kind
though.
Of a,
that yep. just shows you when they're doing promotional stuff, like that they'll put a face on anything.
Yeah.
And what the hell does a Western string tie have to do with Batman and Robin? Yeah. You know, if you're a superhero fan and you like square dancing, I guess.
My mom's got this one picture of my brother and I. Like I said, we were like 6 and 7, and we were dressed up. I think we were going to church, and we were all dressed up, and we had our Batman bolo ties on.
You know, I do, now that you bring that up, that does make me think of a superhero story from when my brother and I were little kids around that age in Prince George. And my grandmother, my dad's grandma, my dad's mom, my grandma Marie, God bless her soul, she just loved us to pieces and wanted to buy us a present. So she went to the store. Oh, superheroes, that's what they like. And they got us 4 superheroes. I think it was Superman. Oh, yeah, I know exactly what it was. My brother Dave got the Hulk and Spider-Man, which were really cool. And I got Superman and Robin.
Not
even Batman. She didn't know that he was a sidekick. She just saw a guy in a cape and bought him. There you go. Here's Robin. And I remember my dad even joking around. We were playing with him in the living room. My dad goes, "What's Robin do? Is he getting babysat by somebody here?" But that goes to show you, old folks don't always know better. Anyway, wrapping things up, I think we're going to move over to our final thing we do, which is trivia. And I believe Mike has prepared a question today.
Yes. Since we were talking about signs.
Okay.
Here's one for you. When was the first neon sign made and
Ooh.
Displayed?
Ooh. Now I got to think. Now, Ted, you could be help here. There's been neon since you've been alive, hasn't there?
Yeah, that probably started in Vegas, I would think.
Well, that's where they displayed a lot of it. But I seem to remember, okay, I caught a picture in my head of like black and white photos of Radio City Music Hall with neon out front and that. And I'm going to say that would be the 20s or 30s even. I have no idea the answer to this question. I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say 1925.
Okay, 1912.
Oh, wow.
And it was in Paris.
Ooh. Oh, France.
And the guy who was making the sign started making it in 1910. but completed it in 12, and it was in Paris for a ladies' hairdressing shop, and it was called Palais Coiffure, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that's Coiffure. That's something to do with hairdos, isn't it? Wasn't your wife
1912 was when it was
1912
first displayed.
So what, Coiffure, that's a hairdressing word, isn't it?
Your wife Coiffure, was a hairdresser. That's hair. You, what would prompt you to put a question like that together? I'd like to know. Well, I would never thought of that.
Honestly. Yeah, because I was just thinking about signs. You know, this the way the prices of signs have exploded in the last while.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, so the origin of signs, what's kind of, and I said, well, there's been signs forever. You go back, you know, there were probably signs in the samurai era.
Well, there were signs in the Roman Colosseum days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saying, you know, gladiators today or whatever.
And then I thought, well, maybe when was the first lit up signs? And I thought even more, who discovered neon? When was neon first made?
Ah, well, it's a noble gas.
Yeah, so
that's a good question, really. I like
let's
it.
Give it the respect it deserves. It's a noble gas. So
1912, anyone?
Yeah,
very
curious
good.
About... When neon
I was
started.
Kind of in the right ballpark. I was, you know,
yeah, yeah. You.
I wasn't over the fence. I was in the park. So that's very good. We just learned something about neon we never knew before.
I like that question.
It's yeah, good. Me too. And that's it for us today. Thank you for tuning into the Collector's Cast.
Bye now.
Night, all.